The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined with Shaka Hislop here in the studio. Lots to get through today. We'll kick off in the Premier League, the big game, of course, the North London Derby. And it would be Arsenal would take all 3 points with a 2-1 victory, putting them level on points now with Aston Villa. Plenty to talk about in this game as we welcome Jurgen Klinsmann, Frank Leboeuf and Nader Manua to the show. Nader, I want to start with you. The big talking point, certainly from Jose Mourinho's point of view, was the penalty. Was it a penalty for you?
For me, it wasn't. I think when I first saw it in real time, it looked like Sanchez maybe tackled Lacazette as he was taking the shot. But then when I saw the replay back and I saw Lacazette essentially whiff the shot and then a collision happened afterwards, I was thinking that's probably not a penalty. But, you know, they've reviewed it and decided that was the best course of action.
Just a reminder, Michael Oliver wasn't even sent over to the monitor to check his decision. Jurgen, for you, the right decision?
He still made really contact with like I said, so I think it was, at the end of the day, it was a penalty.
Frank Leboeuf?
Hello. No, it wasn't. For me, I think what Sanchez tries to do is to put his body between the ball and the net. We don't see his leg going towards Lacazette. It's mostly Lacazette, by missing the ball, who hits, in fact, Sanchez's leg. So therefore, for me, there is no foul, and it might be a desperate and no controlled tackle, but not to hit Lacazette, just to block the shot. So therefore, for me, it's not a penalty.
I agree. And the more I see it, the more I think it's Lacazette who initiates the contact with Sanchez. I wondered if Sanchez caught Lacazette's right ankle. On that look, it doesn't seem so. And it's as Lacazette whiffs, he follows through and catches Davinson Sanchez. So, not a penalty for me.
Well, I think what we need to highlight here is the one person who believes that it was a penalty is the former Spurs player. Obvious anti-Spurs bias.
That's right.
Are you buying what they're selling, Jurgen? Can you see their point?
Yeah, I see that point, and it's totally fine with me. I mean, it's probably a 50-50, go this way or go the other way. I think overall, watching that entire match, I was really disappointed by the Spurs performance today. Yeah. I thought Arsenal controlled the game from the beginning on. They had early chances. They hit the post early. And overall, I mean, there was one real chance, you know, for Spurs with a free kick at the end of the game that from Harry Kane when he hit the post. Spurs would not have deserved to get anything out of this game today. It was not their day. I was pretty impressed by Arsenal. I really have to say they were, from this first minute on, they were there. They were dominant. They were quick in their thinking. They were quick in their executing. As a Spurs player, it's difficult to say that, but I have to admit they deserved the win today.
Nathan, what happened? Because there was so much excitement. Obviously, Spurs building that momentum with that front four, looking so good, so dangerous in attack. I know Son went off after 17 minutes, but even before then, they looked so flat, so lifeless, so bang average. What happened?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And to be honest, looking back at the game, I think you can see that Arsenal, I think they've not lost at home to Spurs in the league for 10 years. So they're obviously confident and they know that whatever their form is going into the game, overall, it doesn't really matter because they know they can get a good result against them. And for Spurs, as Jose Mourinho said after the game, the first half performance was very, very negative. And I think that slow start ultimately gave Arsenal more confidence. And as the game was progressing, you could see that they, you know, they believed in themselves. Even when they went 1-0 down through a great goal, they have nothing to worry about. And I think today Arsenal, as Jürgen said there, they impressed me quite a lot. But for Spurs, I think you've got to ask some serious questions, because obviously Son going off is a big issue. But come derby day, you expect a lot more than that.
Jose Mourinho said after the game, Frank, that some of his big players went missing. It's difficult not to look at maybe the likes of Gareth Bale, who maybe he was alluding to, who did nothing.
Yeah, he did nothing, but maybe because Jose Mourinho went back to what he thinks is the best way to play football, meaning dropping a little bit, being defensive, and not giving the offensive aspect of the game an opportunity to win a game. He did that lately. It worked. It was very entertaining. And all the Spurs fans can agree with me that he went nowhere with the defending tactic. And he went back to that, especially the first half, and he brought nothing. He asked Bale to defend with Doherty, and it was a real nightmare on the right side of the Tottenham side, where Tierney was doing with Smith-Rowe what they really wanted to do on their left side. So Mourinho changed in the second half, but it was too late. I mean, the mentality of the players wasn't offensive for that game. It was only defending well and counter-attacking like they did for like 6 months. And at the end of the day, it didn't work. Like it didn't work for 6 months.
Let's talk about the one positive for Spurs. Of course, that extraordinary Eric Lamela goal. Jürgen, just explain to us how technically difficult that is.
I tell you, I cannot explain this one because I would have broken my leg doing that. So no, this was an absolute beauty by Lamela. I mean, this is a move or a skill that you really do when you grow up. You do it in the streets, when you play in the backyard, or in some, I don't know, some parks. You know, when you just fool around as kids. That's what you do there. And he did it in a game like this. I mean, it's just unbelievable, skillful. It's just such a beauty. In my opinion, definitely the goal of the year.
And Nedim, he executed it to perfection.
Yes, he did. He did. It really stunned me. But then looking back, he actually did it in the Europa League for Spurs from the edge of the box. So he's obviously somebody who feels very confident doing that. But for me personally, it makes me feel very uncomfortable because I know how I'd feel if I tried to do that. So credit to him. It's a great finish. You probably won't see many goals like that again. But as I say, he's very, very comfortable doing it.
Frank, could you ever pull anything? Could you kick the ball like that?
I tried many times, you know, and I hit my fibula with my... Well, I hit my my calf with my right fibula trying to do it. So, of course, I'm not very keen on doing that again. That's absolutely fantastic because the power that he gives to the kick is amazing, because you can maybe chip the ball. Most of the time it's what players do with that, but they don't have that power. It's a real shot, so it's absolutely fantastic.
We watched it together, weren't we, Shaq?
Yeah.
And at first we didn't quite realise. I was imagining, like most, what had actually happened.
You see it and you just... Well, at first you're in awe of what just happened, and then you see the replays and... the skill of it and the timing of it. And if you're Thomas Partey and you're coming to Lamela, you think, I've got him here. As that ball is laid off, you think, I've got him here. And then Lamela produces that. I mean, it was sheer brilliance and totally against the run of play. And in the end, it turned out to be a rather miserable day for Lamela and Spurs. But left us with a highlight.
Yeah, indeed. Like Lamela getting sent off. Like a lot of storylines within this game. But even before the game, of course, the big story was Aubameyang being dropped to the bench for being late, reportedly. Arteta saying that they were keeping it internal. It was a disciplinary matter. Jürgen, just from a coach's point of view, a lot of people were saying, oh, come on, you should fine him and then talk about it in the week, because you can't drop one of your star players for one of the biggest matches of the season.
Yeah, I mean, from a manager point of view, you know, the question is, you know, whatever I decide now, do I punish the player or do I just forgive him and move on? You know, how can I make sure that the locker room, speaking, the entire team is behind my decision? So it's more about the signal that you send out to the other players, to the entire team, than actually to Aubameyang. You know, and he decided in that moment, that specific moment, it is better to send basically him on the bench to make it very, very clear that it's not acceptable what he did. And with that, he got the attention of the entire team, you know, and the spirit was then high going into this game. And you could see that in Arsenal's body language. They were present. They were from the first second on. They were right there. They were highly aggressive. And they kept that throughout the entire game. So it was the right decision by Arteta. It could be maybe the same situation occurs again in 2 or 3 months' time. And he will decide maybe the opposite, because you always have to think about what does that mean for the entire team. You know, how will the players take a decision like that? And sometimes it's better you stay strict, you know, you punish it, and sometimes it's better you just stay casual and just move on and have a talk with him and then explain it to the team. So it always depends on the inside of the locker room.
Frank?
Yeah, I just want to recall that it happened to Tuchel with Paris Saint-Germain when they played against Marseille during the Clásico, where Mbappé in the afternoon before the game, and they put him on the bench, put them on the field. They came on, and Rabiot was upset about the decision. But Mbappé came on and scored a goal, and everything was, you know, forgotten. So, you know, it's even if he's the captain of Arsenal, you know, you have to show example. And I think it's Arteta's duty to make a point and to say, you know, it can happen to everybody. There is a hierarchy, and don't forget it, because otherwise you're going to be punished. So I think it's just fair. And just want to say about Lamela, I would have loved to play against Lamela. Like, I would have loved to play against Paredes, because you feel that the guy is so touchy that you can annoy him after 5 minutes and you're going to play 11 against 10 very, very soon.
Away from Frank winding people up, Needham, what do you make of the Aubameyang situation and the way Arteta handled it? It looks great now, obviously, after they won.
Well, yeah, but I think it's fair. As far as being a footballer goes, I think being late on a game day is a cardinal sin. You can't do that. And if you do that, you shouldn't expect to play. And I think the message that he sent has been very, very clear and very obvious. And I think for me, as an ex-player, when it comes down to messages being delivered from a manager, when they show consistency, I think they gain a lot more respect. If they decide to make it okay for one person to do this, but not somebody else, then those type of inconsistencies will make people start doubting them as a coach. But he's done the right thing. If you are late on a game day, you shouldn't expect to play. It doesn't matter who you are. And they put him on the bench, and the rest of the team probably respect the decision of the manager. They understand that will happen to them should they do the same. And they know at the end of the day, the bar is there and it doesn't get lowered for anybody at all.
I totally agree. I think you're trying to develop a culture of excellence within a football club. And part of that is a respect for the rules, a respect for your teammates. And if showing up on time for a meeting, regardless of whether it's game day or not, and especially if it's not your first time being late, you can't be upset with whatever that punishment is or what it may look like or how much it is in actual fact. And I think Arteta's right. And more so than just about today and the 3 points against Spurs, but in the long term, about your control and the respect that you garner within your dressing room.
Jürgen, I just want to go back to the point that I brought up with Frank regarding Jose Mourinho coming out after the game and saying some of his big players went missing. How dangerous a game is that to play, being so outspoken about some of your players in that way?
Well, it always depends, obviously, on how the players take it. You know, and I think now, especially if I look at the Spurs players, they are very experienced players. And they are hungry themselves. They badly, badly want to win titles, you know, as soon as possible, because that's what they're running after since years. So I think with a comment like that, you know, Jose, he really speculates on the positive side of their reaction, meaning, okay, give us another little push here, you know, to make sure that we get back on track and make sure we win the next game, you know. And so that's the intention of comments like that. Sometimes you got to do it publicly. It's probably more the rare case. And most of the time you do it internally, you know, when you talk to them one-on-one or in a smaller group. But it's one of the things that you have to utilize here and there just to send out a little bit of a message.
Here's the thing, Dan. You know how much Jose Mourinho frustrates me a lot of times with so much of what he said. It's not the first time you've seen Jose do this to one of his players, with different effects. Recently, he had a lot to say about Gareth Bale and his training, and you've seen a response from today apart, a response from Gareth Bale, and you think he got that right. And after this game, so much of the conversation will be around big players not showing up. It'll be around the referee and the penalty that maybe shouldn't have been. But the truth is, I think Jose Mourinho has a lot of blame to bear for what you saw today. And before the game, he was asked about Arsenal, and his response, something, well, I look up the table, not down, mm-hmm. you know, in kind of poking fun at Arsenal and the position that they're in. But then you look at how Spurs, a team who apparently are looking up and not down, approach Arsenal, who are mid-table. At no point ever really putting them under pressure. At no point, bar the last 10 or 15 minutes of the game, did they look like they were trying to actually win this game. Now, keep in mind that before today, Arsenal's last two goals came against Burnley and Olympiacos when Arsenal were pressed high up and they gave the ball away. Yet never over the course of 75 minutes did Spurs try to press Arsenal. I think a lot of Spurs' problems were tactical. Yet we come away from this game talking about big players not showing up and Michael Oliver not maybe going to the screen, which I think is a disservice to both teams, in all honesty.
Nadim, if you're in that Spurs locker room, how do you react to these comments?
I think that's a tough one, because the way that I see Mourinho, I'm a bit like Shaka, where sometimes I'm up, sometimes I'm down, mostly down, but sometimes I think he makes sense. And in this instance, what he said, these big players didn't turn up, and for as much as he has to bear the brunt of that in terms of tactics and so on, the big players didn't turn up. So if you hear your manager say something about you out in the press and you can't argue with what he's actually said, then how do you react? You have to react by maybe trying to step up and do better, maybe ask him to not say it in public. But the fact of the matter about this game, when you look back, was like you didn't play well enough. So I think it's one of those where you have to take it on the chin. Unfortunately, for a few of them today, it was deserved. But I expect a big response from Spurs. They've been in good form recently. Some of their players at the front especially have been doing particularly well. But, you know, if a manager says you didn't turn up on the day and he says it out in the public and you didn't turn up, are you going to say to him, well, I did? Because the fact of the matter is you didn't.
Meanwhile, the late game in England saw Manchester United defeat West Ham by 1-0. It was a Dawson own goal 8 minutes into the second half that proved to be the difference between the two sides. Nadim, not the prettiest of games, but United won't care.
No, they won't care at all, no. But to be honest, the way that West Ham United play, they do like to drop off and just encourage the other team on them, and then it can maybe hit them on the counter-attack. But unfortunately, you know, the tactics had to go out the window as soon as they went 1-0 down. And I think West Ham were better from this point. But before that, they did make for a very, very tough game. But, you know, credit to United, they're finding ways to win games. And for as much as it wasn't the best one in the world, United have got a good feeling around them overall. And obviously, it seems like the title race is essentially done. But just finding ways to win games against tough sides like this and tough opposition who will drop off, I think that's ultimately going to be a positive for them going forward between now and the end of the season.
Frank, what did you make of this game?
I didn't find him boring. I find it interesting tactically, where I was wondering where Moises wanted to go with its tactic, you know, waiting, being solid, of course, but not trying most of the things offensively with his team and the quality of his players. And when he was 1-0 down, then it changed and they went forward and they were quite dangerous. And I wonder why he didn't try that from the beginning. Maybe because he thought that Manchester United was a very good team in counter-attack. But I think he can have some frustration and regrets today after the game, because I think they didn't try enough. On the Manchester United side, they did what they had to do. They're very solid. They're opportunist. They get a goal. They close the door and they get the 3 points and they go ahead. So nothing much to say. I think Rashford is tired. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has to protect him, I think, until the rest of the season, not only for Manchester United, but for the national team. And I'm still very fond of Luke Shaw and McTominay. I think they are two players very, very underrated right now, because they are absolutely fantastic players.
Nadim?
I was going to say one thing as well that I think I picked up from the game is, for as much as West Ham went for it more after they went 1-0 down, the thing that was really missing for them today was Jesse Lingard. Mm-hmm. And you can see how important he is to that side, because when he does play, yes, they can soak up a bit of pressure, but they're more dynamic on the break. Whereas today, I think they went with Martin Noble, who's a great servant for that club. But when he plays on the field compared to Lingard, it's a completely different team for West Ham. And I think if he would have been able to play today due to, you know, better rules or whatever, then I think West Ham United would have had more of a threat. But ultimately, as we've seen in recent weeks, all avenues run through him if the team want to try and score goals. And when he's not there, you know, they come up short most of the time.
What did you write down there, Shaka? What's on your notes?
Oh, no, Lingard was missing.
Good.
I just felt that was huge for West Ham.
Of course, couldn't play against his parent club.
Against his parent club. And you understand what Moyes was trying to do, sit back, soak up pressure, hope you can get Michael Antonio up against the two Manchester United centre-halves. But you just didn't have that link in between that defensive wall and Michael Antonio up front. And despite the 1-0 result, I don't think you can argue too much. I thought United were the better of the two teams, squandered many of their chances, but the better team won, so you can't argue with that.
Premier League action continues on Monday. Wolves taking on Liverpool. 4-1 for a Wolves win. Looks pretty tasty, doesn't it, considering Liverpool's form of late. Liverpool going to the tie and Molineux as favourites. 7-5 on a draw, 11-4.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
AC Milan taking on Napoli. This one goalless as we take it straight into the second half. Politano, not with the cleanest of strikes, Shaq, but they all count.
Yeah. Listen, I think Insigne knows exactly, knows exactly what he's going for here. He knows he just has to get it by Donnarumma. He knows where that bottom corner is and picks it out well. A little bit of a bobbler, but effective.
8 minutes later, Donnarumma makes the save to keep it at 1-0.
Yeah, and this is a good save. Has to react quickly to it, going to his right-hand side.
Remember, no Zlatan for Milan. He's still out injured. Leao leading the line. A chance here for him.
This is a strange one. Leao just lets this ball come onto him. I just wonder if he could have attacked it. Maybe the ball a little bit too loopy.
Rebicson coming off the bench. His header saved by Ospina.
Who would have seen this late? But gets two good hands on it.
And then what a series of action then here. The corner is played in, comes out. Teo Hernandez goes for the ball. He goes down. Milan feels there should be a penalty. The referee says play on. In the action that subsequently happens here, Napoli felt there should be a red card on Teo Hernandez.
Well, you just wonder if there's a little bit of frustrations coming through yet.
The referee then falls over. So lots of things to break it. So Teo Hernandez only given a yellow card for this.
I agree with that. I think it's a yellow card to Teo Hernandez.
Then VAR says to the referee not to check whether or not it's red, but check whether or not this is a penalty.
And again, I'm with the referee here. My first instinct was I think Teo Hernandez goes over rather easily, way too easily. The referee is right in both instances, in my opinion.
Yep, the referee says no penalty. Late on then, Milan trying to get that equaliser, pushing to make it 1-1. And then Rebic says something to the referee, something naughty, and he gets a straight red for that. Milan end the game with 10 men. Napoli taking all 3 points. So what that means is that Milan are 9 points adrift of their City rivals Inter, who won earlier today. Meanwhile, for Napoli, They are fifth in the table now, just 2 points off Atalanta in fourth, and they do have a game in hand. Well, let's welcome in, shall we, Gab Marcotti and Jürgen Klinsmann to the show. Jürgen, is this the day that Inter won the title?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, 9 points. Obviously, there are still 11 games to go, so it's still a way to go. But I think psychologically, this was a big day for Inter. This was a big day. Obviously, they won their game just towards the end of the game with a beautiful header from Lautaro Martinez. And then this result comes along. Funny enough, you know, Politano, ex-Interista, he scores the goal for Napoli. So I think it was a huge day for Inter Milan. 9 points clear now. It looks pretty much like they go all the way now.
Gab?
Rule of thumb, when your points are more than the number of games remaining and there's no head-to-heads, maybe that's when you start to celebrate. So they're not quite there yet because it's 9 points and it's 12 games, but I think they'll be there very soon.
Oh, Gab, keeping a very steady head on all of this. Let's talk about the late controversy, Jürgen. Do you think it was a penalty?
No, I don't think so. I agree with Shaka. I mean, there was slightly contact, but it was not enough for a penalty. And it was the curious thing was, you know, he got, obviously, in his opinion, got fouled. But then he runs so dramatically back and then hits Osimhen with that challenge there on the sideline. You know, it's amazing. You won on one side, you won a penalty. On the other side, you kind of hit 50 yards away. You hit the other guy and almost got a red card. I agree also there. It was a yellow, but you know, but it was a very, very harsh challenge by Theo Hernandez. So it was a dramatic couple of minutes there towards the end.
For Milan, it's all about the top four now, Gab. Is that fair?
I think they'll try to keep going. I think a lot's obviously going to depend on what happens against United on Thursday. If they advance, they're going to look around the Europa League and, you know, they'll see, well, we've got Arsenal, we've got Spurs, we've got maybe, what, Villarreal, one or two others, but, you know, nobody who's head and shoulders above us. So maybe that's when you might see a little bit of a shift. But I think obviously, you know, you take it one, I know it sounds like a horrible footballing cliche, but it's true. You take it one game at a time. And obviously that's the best way to stay in the top four. And if Inter falter, be ready. But obviously 9 points is a lot.
Gab, as you mentioned before, it's general consensus Gattuso will go at the end of the season. If he gets Napoli in the top four, does that change anything?
Who knows? Because Aurelio De Laurentiis is entirely unpredictable. And I think, you know, if he does stay, it's going to be because Gattuso wants to stay. You know, he's not on a huge contract, like we said. And Gattuso, I think, will feel entitled to make a couple demands, not just financially, but in terms of players. Obviously, Napoli spent some hefty sums in the summer to strengthen the squad. Otherwise, though, if the conditions aren't there in terms of calm, in terms of pressure, in terms of the way people are treated, then I could see Gattuso saying, I don't need this. I'm going to move on and try my hand at a different club.
Well, as Jürgen mentioned before, Inter with that win earlier on in the day away against Torino. Let's just recap how exactly they got it done. They were far from their best, but in the end, it didn't matter. And it doesn't matter when you've got those two up front. It would be Lautaro Martinez who would win the penalty, Lukaku would convert it, Shane.
Yeah, and look, it's Lukaku gets the ball into the feet of Martinez. That challenge is an awful one right under the nose of the referee. Had to point to the spot. And then Lukaku steps up and just makes it look so easy.
Inter had to fight, though, because they would find themselves on level footing with 20 minutes to go. Sanabria with the rebound here, with everyone falling on the floor.
Yeah, bodies just everywhere. And you see Eriksen calling for the push. You see here at the bottom of the screen, there is a push which could have gone their way. But in the end, Torino make the most of the opportunity.
But then with 5 minutes to go, sheer quality from Martinez to make it 2-1.
This is an incredible header to win the game. It's not a great ball. He's having to back away from this Lautaro Martinez. Somehow gets a jump, gets the height, gets power and direction on that header.
So a huge win for Inter. Jürgen, how difficult is that header to execute?
Well, at first he's kind of moving backwards, as Xhaka said, and then, you know, you read then the goalkeeper, you give, you try to kind of figure out what's his movement. And obviously by placing it in the long corner, you go against the movement of the goalkeeper. So he can barely kind of get over there to that side, to his left and from Goldie's left side. So it was a very good header, very well read by Lautaro, and obviously a couple of minutes before the end, that was the match winner.
And Gab, these front two just seem to be going from strength to strength together.
Yeah, it's been the story of the season. The work that Conte's done with the pair of them since he's been there. You know, they're not just finishers. They're a big part of the build-up, building up from each other, giving you an out ball from the back, obviously devastating on the counter as well. But, you know, while we all praise Inter, just a little reminder even in this game that, you know, it was 1-1 until Lautaro's header, and Lautaro's header was a moment of magic. We just heard there from Jurgen how difficult, and Xhaka, how difficult it is to pull that off. You can't rely on that every week. So that's why I can assure you Conte is not sitting there saying, oh yeah, we've won the title. You know, he's lighting a fire under these guys and reminding them how close everything is and how they really cannot let up any which way if they want to take this title back to Milan.
Meanwhile, it's been a pretty rubbish week for Juventus, isn't it? After that loss against Porto and seeing them knocked out of the Champions League over the two legs. A lot of criticism aimed at that man. How would Cristiano Ronaldo respond? Really rather well. 10 minutes in, Ronaldo with a header to make it 1-0.
Rather routine. Set piece, dead middle of the box, 6 yards out. Somehow we allow Ronaldo a free header. That's what you get.
14 minutes later, the man himself wins the penalty.
And it's a good ball into the path of Ronaldo. He knows the keeper's coming. He knows the contact's coming. Invites them both. Penalty. And then maybe a sign of some frustrations from Cristiano Ronaldo.
Why did they hit it really, really hard? And then it would be a first half hat-trick within the opening 33 minutes as a typical Cristiano Ronaldo goal, make it 3-0.
Yeah, and Chiesa attracts attention. Cagliari look all leggy. Ronaldo one-on-one with his defender and does as you see him do so often. Couple of crossovers, finds half a yard, finds the back of the net.
What a response. We saw him pointing to his ear, didn't we, afterwards, after that third goal. Juventus with a 3-1 win. A lot of speculation about his future. Well, that's been pretty much been put to bed over the last 24 hours. This is what Juventus' chief football officer, Fabio Paratici, said. It makes me laugh. I never imagined Ronaldo could be put into question. He won so many trophies and scored so many goals at Juventus. It's a privilege to have him here. We are happy to have him here. He surely represents the future of Juventus. Now, Cristiano Ronaldo, being man of the match, should have given a post-match interview today. He didn't. Instead, he went on Instagram and he put this. Now, I can't wait for the next games and challenges, the next records and trophies. Believe me, this story is still far from being over. Here's the key sentence. The future is tomorrow and there's still a lot to win for Juventus and with Portugal. Gab, that's it then, isn't it? Is that done? Is that all that speculation about going to Real Madrid or Manchester United? Is that put to bed for now?
Well, look, I mean, as far as Real Madrid, I think the numbers are very clear. There's no indication that Real Madrid are in a situation to be able to afford him or have any kind of interest in him. In the short term, those words tell you that he wants to stay. Like I said before, there's no indication that he wants to leave. However, there is a reality, which is his contract. His contract expires in 2022. He's got 1 year to run after this season. It's an enormous contract with Juventus. It pays him in excess of $60 million a year. And there's been a global pandemic, and Juventus recorded enormous losses. So there's obviously a scenario where he may need to look for a new club in 2022. There's a scenario where he might change his mind. He's entitled to change his mind between now and the summer. And if that happens, you know, looking at which clubs have cash and are in a solid financial position and could use somebody like him, it's hard not to imagine Manchester United, where they have Edinson Cavani in some ways a similar role, obviously different type of player, but also veteran center forward who makes a lot of money and who's on a 1+1 deal. Now, that said, before people get overly excited, you know, there's no indication that this is going to happen this summer or next summer or that United are even interested. But I think there is a situation where this summer, simply because of the way the financial situation is, it's going to be really hard, even if he wanted to leave, for him to find a club in comparable terms. So I don't believe he's going to leave Juventus in the summer. After 2022, who knows? Because presumably he's going to want a multi-year deal and he's going to feel rightly that he deserves one, given his performances this season.
Jürgen, it would have been impossible for him to avoid all that criticism that has come his way over the last few days. What a response.
Yeah, a response just that he's extra class. He's just one of the best, you know, over the last 15 years. Obviously, we always measure him with Messi, but he's just a superstar. And that's why the Italian Serie A and especially Juventus brought him into Italy. They brought him to Juventus because the Serie A wants to become a big, big deal again, like it was in the 80s and the 90s. It was the top league in the world with Maradona, Careca, Alemão, Mateos, and many other ones. You know, so that it was not only just Juventus taking Ronaldo on board, it was the entire Serie A now being part of Cristiano Ronaldo. And that's why I think, you know, his future is only at Juventus. His future is to build something very special there. Juventus itself is also known to hold on to their superstars. Look at Gianluigi Buffon, look at Chiellini. So if he wants to kind of be part of that family, of the Agnelli family, the empire of Juventus, then he stays there. And he's hungry than ever. I mean, he's just never satisfied. He's always driving for the next goal and the next goal. He scores one, he wants the next one. Scored 23 goals so far in the season. Then things go wrong here and there. That's part of life, you know. So their game, their loss against Porto is certainly was a big disappointment. And then obviously they criticize always the biggest names, which is him. Mm. But at the end of the day, he's just a winner. And you want to be on his side. If you are Chiesa, if you are Weston McKennie, if you are any kind of part of this team, you want to have Cristiano Ronaldo being the leader of it.
Jürgen, would you understand why he wants to stay at Juventus?
Oh, I'm totally convinced that he wants to stay at Juventus because he goes there and he's on a mission. You know, he proved himself, obviously, in Spain, an incredible career, obviously, with Man United. He proved himself with Portugal winning the Euros. Obviously, the title that he would love to win the most would be the World Cup with Portugal, which is not obviously an easy undertaking. But I'm totally convinced that he feels all the support by Juventus. He feels all the support by the Italian football fans. And that's why I don't think in his mind there's any doubt not to stay at Juventus.
Gab, just going back to that first half incident that we saw Ronaldo get a yellow card for, should he have been sent off?
A lot of people said he was lucky to stay on the pitch. I think but this is when he went and he collided with the goalkeeper, Alessio Cragno. I don't know that it was a red card. I think you can see that there certainly was no malice on his part. And he tries to pull out of it. But to me, the incident goes to show you kind of how badly Cristiano wanted to make things happen in that game. But it was certainly reckless, and he fully deserved the yellow. And it was certainly a very scary moment, I think, for the goalkeeper, because if he doesn't just pull his leg back a little bit, he could have taken his head off.
Meanwhile, Champions League action continues this week. Atalanta flying the flag for Italy, looking to turn around that 1-0 first leg defeat against Real Madrid. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Meanwhile, the big game in Germany today, Leipzig in second, taking on Eintracht Frankfurt in fourth. Remember, Bayern Munich with that win yesterday, so Leipzig looking for a victory to keep on the coattails of the defending champions. And they would open the scoring. Forsberg in the 46th minute to make it 1-0.
But it all comes from Kluivert giving too much space, and then this shot dips wickedly from the goalkeeper, who gets good hands, but Forsberg finishing it off.
However, 15 minutes later, Kamada find himself a little bit of space on the edge of the box and squeezes past the goalkeeper.
Yeah, Andreas Silva gets down this left-hand channel. Deflection makes it awkward for Kamara, who adjusts and knee bash. They all count.
So in the end, it finishes Leipzig 1, Eintracht Frankfurt 1, as I mentioned, then Bayern Munich 4 points clear at the top of the table. Jürgen, we've discussed the title race so much in Germany, haven't we? But the problem is, you feel if you're Leipzig, you have to win in, pretty much. And dropping points like this just won't do if you want to catch Bayern.
Yeah, and this is the key, you know, it's just consistency. And you got, if you want to really kind of take that title away from Bayern Munich, you should get 3 points in a game like that. Even if Frankfurt's playing in an outstanding season, they themselves want to get into the Champions League for next season, so they can do really well. So it's not an easy task, but still, if you want to put Bayern Munich in danger, you got to get the 3 points, and unfortunately, they didn't do that.
And just, it's the first time we've had a chance to talk properly, Jürgen, since Bayern won yesterday against Werder Bremen. Some brilliant football in this game from Bayern.
Yeah, they're just, I mean, when it matters, they're there. Yeah. You know, they are so focused, they are so consistent, and then they just say, we go there on the road. You know, I mean, they're coming from a lot of games over the last couple of weeks, but they could just get the job done. They get it done, they grind it out, and Lewandowski always finds a way somehow to put it in the back of the net, which he did again.
And Thomas Müller at the heart of everything good, particularly that second goal that we just saw. He's got to play for your boys, and in the summer, Jürgen.
I think so. I think there will be a conversation coming up between Joachim Löw, who decided now to, after the European Championship, to step down as a German manager, and Thomas Müller. I'm pretty sure that they will figure out a way to find a nice cafe in Munich or somewhere in Bavaria and have a chat and talk about how they can win the European Championship.
Jürgen, just stay with us. There's one more thing I want to talk to you about, and that is the relegation scrap in Germany. A huge win today for Bielefeld, who gets by Leverkusen. Just an absolute free-fall at the moment. 17 minutes into this one, Shaq. Ritsu with the goal to make it 1-0.
Yeah, and just more committed to get on the end of this ball across. Defender can't adjust quickly enough, and Ritsu is committed off the other side of the crossbar.
Into the second half we go. Look at the space. It's extraordinary that Okugawa has. Keeps calm, gets it done.
Well, two defenders get drawn out to this left-hand side again. They're nowhere near as committed in winning that ball. And you get lucky there, Bielefeld.
And then with 5 minutes to go, Patrick Schick finally gets something going for Bayer Leverkusen, but they couldn't find the equaliser. You can just see what that victory means for Bielefeld. It lifts them out of the relegation places. They sit 50. Schalke are down. Schalke are done and dusted. Their terrible season. They just can't wait for it to end. But Jürgen, it's incredibly tight, isn't it, at the bottom. You would have Cologne, Bielefeld, Hertha Berlin and Mainz all scrapping for survival.
And that's the real beauty of promotion relegation. This is a real, real drama that you see in all the top leagues in Europe, you know, towards the end of the season. It's almost as dramatic as, you know, who wins the title or who gets into the Champions League. And now, really, you have four teams in that battle. Obviously, Schalke is already considered being in the second division for next year, so they have to rebuild completely. But then you have Mainz, you have Bielefeld, you have Hertha Berlin and Cologne being 1 point of each other. So this is real drama. This is where you can see how the people deal with that type of nerves and yeah, just being anxious, being scared of going into the second division, because we're not talking only about the relegation on a sporting, on a technical level. You talk about the relegation that puts you financially in a completely different league. I mean, there's you're losing so much money going down in the second division that you simply cannot afford it.
Jürgen Klinsmann, as always, thank you very much. Let's turn our attention to a big shock in France today. PSG taking on Nantes. Now, 20 minutes into this, you want a bit of controversy, Shaq? You know you do. Right, here we go. Kolo gets taken down in the penalty area. The referee plays on. VAR would review the decision and say that it was the right one.
I'm not sure at all here. That's an old stretch arm. It has no chance of getting to that ball. Plays the man. That's a penalty for me.
Penalty not awarded, though. 3 minutes to go in the game. Julian Draxler would make it 1-0.
Tidy finish. Deflection takes it into his path. And he's just cool in front of goal here. Draxler slotted in by the goalkeeper.
The second into the second half. Nkolo makes it 1-1.
This is a thumping finish. PSG get themselves in their own trouble. Bad back pass. Nkolo just with a fantastic finish. Rafa disappointed.
And then on the counter-attack, Nkolo once again at the heart of everything. Good for Nantes. Plays it into Simon. And it's 2-1.
Really good counter-attack. PSG have got to be asking questions about themselves defensively. One ball, one flick, and all of a sudden it's 2v1 at the back. Not have the pace, have the composure.
Pochettino, they're not happy at the end of the game as he sees his side lose by 2-1. Let's just confirm what that means regarding the standings in Ligue 1. PSG chasing that top spot, of course, as defending champions. But they find themselves second, 3 points adrift of Lille. Lyon in third, level on points for PSG. Frank Leboeuf still with us. Frank, how did this happen?
Well, in fact, it's a little bit what we see with Paris Saint-Germain. We all have seen around the world the fantastic game they played in the first leg against Barcelona, but 3 days after they lost at home 2-0 against Monaco. And it's really a very average season from a team with so many talents in it. And it's why maybe Lyon and Lille are for Lyon chasing Paris Saint-Germain, Lille staying up and over above Paris Saint-Germain. It's not a very good season, and the return, the second leg against Barcelona showed to the world that Paris Saint-Germain is not healed by his demon. So there is some problems. On top of it, I have to say something. You know, we saw Leonardo coming down close to Pochettino, talking to him. Di Maria was burglarized. How do you say that? Somebody came to his home and stole everything. So it's why he was substituted. Another player from Paris Saint-Germain too, but we don't know his name. The problem is their families were at home. So very worrying situation for Di Maria and the other player. It's why Di Maria came out. But at the end of the day, if we go back to the penalty, the game that Paris Saint-Germain got, it was a penalty for me. Kimpembe can't get the ball. It's an clear obstruction from Kimpembe, and it's a clear penalty, and everybody in France, in all television, agreed about that. But the game they offered to the fans and the viewers on TV, it is appalling. The first half was very so-so. The second half was horrendous. That's not a contender. We can show that to the French television or to the world. It's a real nightmare. I mean, we were expecting better from Pochettino taking over from Tuchel, but we don't see anything coming from there. Nothing.
They're still going to win the league, though, Frank, yeah?
Well, Lille is doing great. Lille played against Monaco. Monaco is fourth. They played away from home. They got a draw, 0-0. Christophe Galtier, a good friend of mine, is working very, very hard to make sure that he's going to stay above Paris Saint-Germain. And it's possible for them to do so. And we'll see. I think they have a direct confrontation very soon as well. So we'll see what, how it works. But really, so far, I think it can be an exception to the rule. Like we saw Montpellier once, we saw Monaco as well in the last decade winning the title because Paris Saint-Germain didn't do the job.
Frank Leboeuf, thank you very much. Meanwhile, in La Liga, Atleti, of course, dropping points this weekend. Barcelona with a chance to close the gap to 4 points on Simeone's side. And they've got a nice opponent to try and do it against. They're taking on struggling Huesca. Barca 6-1 on to get the victory and move up to second in Spain. And of course, we'll be reflecting on that match, plus looking back at Liverpool against Wolves and looking ahead to those Champions League ties on the next edition of ESPN FC. So be sure to join us.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We'll end up in Australia. Central Coast Mariners taking on Perth Glory. 25 minutes into this one. Marco Urrea making it 1-0 to Central Coast.
Well, on a sloshy old pitch, hard to make to build those counter-attacks, but Urrea finds himself right place, right time.
There's a delay to this game because of the weather when it eventually would kick off, though. We'd see Central Coast take the lead. Fornaroli, though, making it 1-1.
Good ball in to pick him out and an equally good header by Fornaroli.
Di Agostino then will make it 2-1 to Perth. Look how wet it is.
Hey, doing anything on this pitch is hard work, and Perth making somehow sense of the conditions.
Matt Simon there would take one in the back of the head. The referee checks VAR, awards a penalty.
He just gets ahead of his...
Yeah, you can't do that.
No, you can't.
You can't.
Simon gets ahead of his man and then the bump in the back. Rightly punished.
Yeah, you go. Simon then dispelling Frank Leboeuf's nonsense about you can't win a penalty and then take it. to make it 2-2. Finally, Western United taking on Brisbane Roar. Just a one goal in this game. Amongst all the traditional seagulls, Perias with the diving header to make it 1-1.
What a header this is. Defender doesn't know he's coming. He's a little bit slow to get to it. But Perias committed and a good header from a tight angle.
Western United then taking all 3 points. Just to confirm it, it's Central Coast who sit top of the table, 6 clear of Adelaide United. Huge game in Liga MX, isn't it, on Sunday night. Chivas taking on Club America. It will dominate the conversation, I imagine, on the latest edition of Football Americas, which drops on Monday. Remember, a brand new show with Hercules Gomez and Sebastian Salazar. That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Special thank you, of course, to Shaka coming in with his bad back.
The things I do.
I know.
For the cause.
Complained a lot about it as well, Shane. That's it then. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Nadim's with us, as is Frank. Shaka Hislop with us in the studio.
Still here.
I know, bad back and all, Shaka. You couldn't leave your bed. You were like bedridden for two weeks.
And I'd have you know, Dan, that's absolutely right.
Wow. But no, you're a big, brave soldier. Well, Thank you so much for coming
on. Show goes on and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Frank, you're upset with me. Why?
Because you just talked about me without giving me the opportunity to answer to your stupid comments about penalties. You know, I heard you during the highlights, you know?
So this is going back to...
Shaka!
We just did a highlight from Australia, yeah, and the player got brought down and then stood up and took a penalty.
Simon,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Frank always says the person who gets tackled to win the penalty shouldn't take it because he's mentally not right, which is nonsense.
Which is not nonsense that you can have exception to confirm the rule, but it's not nonsense, you know. It's basics. It's putting the players who are going to shoot the penalty in the best conditions. So if he has been tackled psychologically, he should be a part to make sure somebody else in the right situation psychologically can take it. It's not nonsense. It's protecting the players and giving the most chances to score a goal against fantastic goalkeepers like Xhaka.
Ronaldo got brought down today. He scored a penalty, Frank.
Who that?
Cristiano Ronaldo, that guy.
Ronaldo?
Yes.
Yes, you're talking about Ronaldo. I'm talking about all players in the world, average players like me, you know?
Well, what about my man Simon in the A-League? Nathan, where do you stand on Frank's nonsense?
It's what I'm saying. It's what I'm saying.
I have to listen to a World Cup winner.
Yeah.
Whatever the World Cup winner says is fact.
Thank you.
So I'm with you, Frank. I'm with you 100%.
I'll give you a few more.
We're not back here again.
I tell you what, get a few more shows with Frank and you'll change it too.
Yes, we are.
The amount of nonsense that comes out of that man's mouth. Right, first one. This is Frank, who really upset a lot of people, Frank. You're not on Twitter, so they all tweet me in an angry way yesterday when you said you prefer to have Harry Kane than Lewandowski.
Yeah, I don't care about that. You know, I'm not on Twitter, and we live in a democracy. Well, since I was told. So I think what I want to think, and I say what I want to say.
Hey,
and I didn't kill anybody. I just talked about two fantastic players, and I had to make a choice. That's it. Turn the page.
Turn the page. After Lamela's goal today, have any of you ever seen a goal similar or so incredible you reacted the way his teammate Reguilón did? Nadim, you must have seen some great goals in your time. You probably scored against you.
Yeah, loads scored against me. Like, oh, what a great finish by the guy. Incredible. There's nothing I could have done. One of the best ones I saw was Alano scored a free kick from 35, 40 yards out. And I thought, there's no way he's going to shoot. And he shot, and he went right into the top corner, wobbled. And I was directly behind it. And at that point, I was like, I'm not ready for this. All hail Alano.
Frank, you must have been around. Were you on the bench? I think you've told me the story before when Roberto Carlos scored that incredible free kick against France.
Against France, yeah. I was on the bench, and we couldn't see the curve because on the position we were, but the distance was so big already that it was quite impossible to score a goal. And we saw the highlights after. Of course, it was amazing. But I want to talk about somebody who passed away, and he was an Algerian player, Stephen Keshi. He was absolutely fantastic, and I played with him in Strasbourg and scored a goal, a free kick as well, from 40 yards or 50 yards, I don't know. It was simply amazing. And we needed that goal to go up in the League One with Strasbourg. The stadium got absolutely crazy. Nobody thought he would shoot, and he did, and he went in the top corner. I mean, amazing. Stefan, if you hear us, you know, out of my man.
What about you, Shaq?
Probably the best I've seen. You remember that Di Canio volley?
Yes, yeah.
Right, I was actually injured for that game, but I remember hearing about it and knowing exactly what happened. And the only, I think, the difference why nobody from West Ham kind of reacted the way that Reguilón did is kind of used to do that a lot in training.
Right.
And so when it happened in a game, as much as it kind of sent people crazy, the West Ham players, we'd seen it. You know, he used to do that regularly. He was that good.
And then you're on the receiving end of many Letizia, yeah.
Yeah, why are you going to bring that up?
Well, I'm just saying, you've experienced a lot of...
Not one person has mentioned Matt Letizia.
Well, I just thought I'd bring it up.
You just decided to throw it.
That's it. I just mentioned it.
I'm with Frank.
Dan.
I'm with Frank.
Frank,
you see the same thing? See what you're talking about with him?
I know. That guy... He's a bad person. He's a bad person. You know what he is. Can I brag a little bit?
Nadim will see exactly what you're like in a minute.
Nadim, did you?
Yeah. People, they will know.
Don't be rude, Frank.
I'm going to brag a little bit.
Stop interrupting.
I don't care about your question. I want to brag a little bit about fantastic goal that I scored against Azerbaijan. We won 2-0, and I had a fantastic volley behind my leg, behind the leg. See that on the video. I will send you the video. You will see. Fantastic. Frank Leboeuf, out of my man.
And you know he's going to send you the video.
Oh, well done.
You know he's going to send.
Yeah, I know.
Well done, Frank.
Scored against Azerbaijan.
Come on.
Right. Did you ever win?
Yeah. Did you score? Did you score against Azerbaijan, Tom Thomas?
I didn't want to.
No, you didn't.
They said, look, do you want to go and play? I said, no. I want to sit here and deal with these idiots every day.
I would have scored against Trinidad and Tobago. What would you have said if I would have scored against Trinidad and Tobago? Yeah, well, nothing.
Shaka was in goal. That doesn't mean anything. What? Nadim, did you ever witness a Rabona attempt during a match in your playing days? Did it work out like Lamella's today?
Nope. Never saw anybody even attempt it. And... yeah, it still takes your breath away when you see it happen.
Yeah.
And it takes some level of bravery and real technique and understanding to even have that as an option, because it's the last thing, the very last thing I would attempt on the football field. But for him, it just came naturally. Just in a blink of an eye, said, this is the right thing to do. And it was a great finish.
What about you, Frank? Have you ever seen anyone try it before?
Yes, and it's crazy that Nedum is with us, because I always talk about Nigerian people today, but Okocha was able to do that, and he tried many times during his career. That guy was, before Ronaldinho, he was the first artist that we saw in Paris Saint-Germain. He was capable of doing crazy things, and for him, it was like he was in the garden, and he was trying those kind of things easily.
Could he have scored against Azerbaijan, though?
No, he scored against Azerbaijan.
Yeah, he didn't. Well, I guess he never played against Azerbaijan.
Should leagues outlaw loan clauses, Shaka, that prevent loan players from playing against their parent clubs like Lingard did today? If you don't want to face a player, why not keep them or loan them to a club that does not play in the same league?
You know, I don't have an issue with it. And as much as I would have loved to see Lingard line up for West Ham today, I think there are circumstances that could cause an issue. You know, what if a lone player has an absolute stinker, scores 2 goals against his parent club? I think that raises a whole lot of questions about...
What do you mean, scores 2 goals against his parent?
Let's say Lingard starts for West Ham and scores the own goal today that gives Manchester United all the points. I think it creates a whole different set
of controversies. You played the game, Shaka. That doesn't... for a professional player, that doesn't...
I think... I understand. Me and anybody I know who, in that situation, you wouldn't accuse them of that.
Right.
But you can see that situation.
So you think Jesse Lingard would have scored an own goal?
See. But all I'm saying is, hypothetically,
yes,
if that happens, right, a player scores an own goal or 2 that benefits his parent club, there are going to be a lot more questions.
There wouldn't be that many questions. We ask a lot of questions on this show, but I think if Jesse Lingard scored an own goal today, I don't think we'd deep dive into whether or not he did it on purpose.
Absolutely, there'll be questions.
Do you think so?
Yes.
Why would you want to help the team that got rid of him?
Well, they haven't got rid of him yet, have they?
Well, like, pretty much. They turned your back on you for 2 years.
Yeah. Let's say, and again, maybe we unfairly criticizing Jesse Lingard here and making him...
You brought it up.
I was just making it easy. I was just throwing out an example. But let's say this is the last game of the season. Man U has to... Right, we've done a rabbit hole here.
Wow, let's say last game of the season. That's a Hollywood movie.
Man U has to win to finish top 4.
Right.
Lingard has a
Champions League qualification bonus in his Man U contract, and he scores an own goal for West Ham. Let's just see.
Right, okay.
Then there'll be questions, Dad.
Wow, Shaka. Wow.
I'm just saying, I don't have an issue with it.
Right. Nathan, what do you make of Shaka's conspiracy theories?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting theory, and I think we'd probably know if he started celebrating after the own goal. I think that'd probably give it away. but what I would say, it's actually quite clever, because I think if you tell a player that they have to leave, they're probably going to be very motivated to play against you to try and prove a point that they should be there.
Right.
So I kind of see it, but then in the same breath, if a club thinks somebody's not good enough to play in their team, let them play. Playing against them shouldn't be a problem. It should be easier for you because you know a player on the opposition. So I'd like to see them get the opportunities to play. And I think, you know, overall, it'd help the game itself, and it'll keep his own team, as in his parent club, more honest, because they have to take him seriously because you know they've got a point to prove.
Yeah, plus doesn't it increase his value, Shaq? If he's gone to another club and done brilliantly and you're looking to sell him.
Hold up, all right.
All right, here we go. A
couple of weeks ago, I mean more than a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
We were questioning the point or the value to Bayern Munich announcing that Upamecano is joining them in the summer.
Yes.
And the questions are around, well...
But that's a completely different scenario.
Yeah, I'm just saying...
Well, you just brought...
No, I'm just saying how easy it is to question a player's motivations in that way.
But he's already signing for Bayern Munich.
Right, but now the questions, and you were asking the question then, on the day. Isn't it better for him if Bayern Munich win the title? That type of nonsense. You, Dan.
But that's completely a different scenario. He's not on loan.
My point is how easy it is to draw a player rather innocently into this type of controversy.
Frank, what do you think?
Well, I think first Shaka should make scenarios for Hollywood, you know, for movies in Hollywood.
Hey, Frank would be in your movie.
Yeah, you can start, Frank.
Yeah, but I don't agree with the guys. I think if you're scared that one of the players you're going to put on loan is going to score a goal against you, keep him. Keep him. Yeah. You think it's because you think he's good. If you loan him, it's because you think he's not good enough to stay in your team, therefore in your club, so you want him to improve. So if he improves the day you play against him, that's all right. That's just football. You didn't want him. So if he scores goal, score. I don't say on goal. If he scores goals, for me, it's just fair. It's just fair. You didn't want him. So accept, you know, full responsibilities for what you do.
Well said, Frank.
You'll see.
Thank you.
It'll happen.
Thank you, Dan.
Well, it won't happen because he's not allowed to. That's the blooming rule that we're discussing.
One day it'll happen.
Right.
They'll change the rule,
yes.
And it'll happen.
And we'll be sat here.
I'll come back here and I'll haunt you.
Wow. So you're dead? Where's that? What's the scenario?
Well, whichever way.
How long are we going?
I'm coming back.
Will West Ham negative style of play be a detriment to English football in the Champions League, Shaka, if they do qualify?
We are talking about the 2021-2022 European champions.
Yeah, they're going to win the Champions League, according to you, aren't they, next year?
Yes. So the answer is no. When we win it, we'll be proven right.
OK. Nathan, were you ever involved in a relegation scrap? If so, what was the most difficult part of being involved in one?
I was involved in three, and it's very, very stressful. The most difficult part, I'd say, is the expectation that every single week, this is going to be the week, we're going to get a result this week, and then you don't get a result. So the pressure ramps up for the next week. But for most of the season, you're not favored to win many games. And in that instance, like, football is a great sport when you're playing well and when you're winning. But when you're not winning, there are lots of questions constantly being asked. You're being doubted from outside, there's doubts on the inside. And you get to a point where you have to start winning games. And I think the first year I stayed up with Queen's Park Rangers, at home we beat Arsenal, we beat Spurs, we beat Stoke, we beat a couple other teams. And we needed those wins to stay up. And the desperation led to us winning those games. But the next year, we lost all of those games. So there's no guarantee that the preparation you put in from Monday through Friday will help you win on a Saturday. And when you're down there, you lose more weeks than not. The luck doesn't seem to go your way. And it's... it's not fun. It's not fun. You don't really enjoy your football, let's just say that.
Nathan, Craig talks about the fact when he was in a relegation scrap with Derby, you would see a lot of players go missing. A lot of players had a hamstring or a muscle injury, things like that. Would you experience that as the season went on, people who weren't up for the fight?
He could do. Was Craig part of the team that got 11 points?
I don't think I've asked him. I don't think it was that season. No, it wasn't.
Okay, cool. That, I'm relieved it's not that season, because if that was the case, I think it was more than just one or two players that went missing.
Yeah.
I would say...
He's much older than that, Nathan, remember.
That's a relief then. I would say really test people, because especially to play in the Premier League, lots of people want that moment, that vision to just be there playing against the very, very best. But again, football is more enjoyable when you are winning. But when you're losing regularly and you don't necessarily have your heart at a football club, you do start to see some people shying away. And one thing that we've seen in terms of success over the years, if you want to do well as a team, you have to be there as a collective. Yeah. Everybody has to be on the same page. And it's very easy to not be on the same page when you're not winning week in, week out. And I think that was some of the worst times in my career, were when you could have a team losing and you'd have 10 different ideas and you see people drift off into little groups and so on. But when things are going great, everybody understands and everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet. So yeah, some people would go missing. Some people would say the manager's wrong. Some people say this player's not good enough, that player's not good enough. And overall, it can be a very, very toxic environment to be in.
Right. After Brandt's goal yesterday and the fan reaction, can Xhaka defend the goalkeeper's union and explain to people just how difficult it is to read and stop a knuckleball from that distance? I don't think you wouldn't have seen a goal. Brandt scored from a long way out with a knuckleball. That's what you need to
it's,
know.
Yeah, I think I saw it. With the new balls, it's really hard to read the flight of that ball, flight of the balls today. You're never quite sure how much movement you're going to get on it. You saw that with Odegaard against Olympiacos as well. You just don't know. It's hard to anticipate where the ball is going to go. And sometimes you overplay the movement, thinking it's going to do one thing and it doesn't. Other times you just don't. I blame the new technology in the balls.
We see most goalkeepers managing to save them.
Dan,
save some, not all. Save some, not all.
Most, not like the error we saw yesterday. Norwegian goalkeeper, Flame Jan.
Okay, I'm going to look it up.
They've just sent it to you, apparently. Frank,
look it up.
Yeah, I want to ask the question of Xhaka, because I don't know if he knows, but we know that it's harder now to stop a goal from a long shot distance because of the way the ball flies. But is it harder for a player to shoot and to find the target? Because if it's harder for goalkeeper, is it harder for the players? Does he know that?
All they're doing is
why are you asking Shaka?
All they're doing is kicking the ball. They're not trying to put
because
it.
Because he was involved in to, that question.
They're not just trying to put it in a corner or find the side netting. They're just trying to strike through it. And you know, if you strike through it cleanly enough, especially from that kind of distance, you're going to get all kinds of movement.
Yeah.
Whereas if you try to bend it, it becomes predictable. Well, when I say predictable, you know, you can predict the flight of it.
What do you think of the goal, Shaka? Thanks for watching yesterday's show, by the way, when we discussed it.
I saw this! Keep your shit on better.
Final question. Nathan, would you rather play in a back four or back three?
I would rather play in a back three. I think a back four is traditional, it has its merits, but with a back three, I think it allows the team to be a bit more forward-thinking in terms of their attack. But you always have three people back there to guarantee an extra layer of security. So, as I say, I prefer that because, as well, you can go and try and win your duels and know that you've got two lots of support around you. Whereas sometimes with a four, you start off as a four, then before you know it, it's just two centre backs, and then before you know it, you're on an island. But when you're in the three, very rarely do you find yourself on that island. So, I think it's better as a three.
Final question. Frank, if you won a penalty, would you then shirk the responsibility and give it to somebody else because you aren't mentally prepared to take it?
Of course. If I say something to all the world, why do you want me to do otherwise for myself? Of course I would do that. I did, because one day...
Oh, this story
We
again.
Had three penalties.
Yeah, I've heard this story.
Why? It's like all people do. They all have stories because they have a long life, so so they have to say all the stories, you know, of their lives.
This is why you pretend. You pretend that you gave your third... You scored two penalties. The third penalty, you pretend you gave up.
because you'd won it and you weren't ready.
What if you had a 25 grand gold bonus?
You see, but really, he couldn't see because someone punched him in the eye.
You know, he knows my life. He listens to me. That's a good point, Dan. I can say goodbye now.
Exactly. You can see the goal. No wonder you gave it up. That was it. Frank, did you ever win a penalty and then not take it?
No.
I don't remember. No, see? I don't think so.
He would have told us by now.
Exactly. You've got to practice what you preach. That's it. we are done. Thank you, Frank.
I love you guys.
Okay, yeah. Thank you very much, Nader Frank.
You're welcome, Dan.
That's not the right answer. I love you, yes, yeah, of course. Oh my God.